TV. But the one that I love is from the USA, standing next to me.
Welcome to a special edition of Women Patriots. Tonight we're going to be discussing the debate and other things that might go along with that. My co-host Billy Cotter's here, and Rick Berlow is going to be with us for just a little bit. First, I just want to start off with just a little bit of a commentary, and this is what I title Rhetoric versus Substance. And as I filter through the election commercials, the talking points, the debates, the speeches, I have come to a conclusion. One party is offering solutions to the problem this country faces, while one party offers rhetoric, fear, and blame. And I urge each and every American to listen carefully to what the candidates are saying and recognize the truth for themselves. When a candidate says his opponent is going to cut your Social Security and Medicare without substantiating his claims, and the other candidate says, here is my plan to save Social Security and Medicare, one is rhetoric, and the other is the solution to the problem that is facing Medicare and Social Security. When one opponent says he wants to give, when one says his opponent wants to give tax cuts to the millionaires and cares nothing for the middle class, and says he wants to build from the middle class up, while the other says, I will create jobs by cutting taxes to the corporations and cutting regulations so that they will build factories here and our small businesses can flourish, one is rhetoric, the other is a plan. When one says, I will reform the tax code and cut loopholes for the wealthy while bringing the tax rate down, this is a plan. While one candidate says their opponent is against the poor And the other says that by bringing jobs to America, his plan will help the poor by growing the economy and creating jobs. One is rhetoric, one is a plan. So, my fellow Americans, you need to listen carefully to what the candidates say, filter it out, and decide who is actually offering solutions to the problems this country faces before you cast your vote. Because this is no longer about party. This is about saving America from the looming economic cliff. And with that, I'm going to bring live Mike, Rick. I got Rick at here and Billy. Hey, guys.
Hey, Billy. How are you?
I'm okay. How are
Hi,
you
Brenda.
Doing? Hey, Billy.
I'm doing all right. Just had a busy day yesterday, and the debate just basically clinched it. And I mean, I don't know about you ladies. I say Romney won at the first 5 minutes when Obama opened his mouth.
Well, for us, yeah.
I had my own intense feelings about the whole thing. And like I said, they looked like two alley cats fighting over an alley.
I thought that was funny.
My son's in the...
I'm here. That's her daughter.
Oh, stop, guys. I told you. Oh. But anyway, no, I just thought the entire, getting in each other's face at a town hall meeting, okay, the only thing that really got me was this was supposed to be an atmosphere of people becoming friendly. And those guys were pitting each other, or being pitted against each other by the audience and by the moderator, pretty much. But the big thing I saw was immaturity on the part of the president. And I saw a very mature Mitt Romney when he was up there. I see he got, he did get flustered a little bit, but I think he recovered well. Because the thing is, Barack Obama, that's all he knows how to do is rhetoric. I mean, you had a good title for that.
Yeah.
That's all he is all about.
Right. And then he likes to say, well, he doesn't have a plan. Well, Romney keeps laying his plan out, and people keep wanting him to get specific. And my only guess is that these people don't understand economics, and job growth and what creates jobs, because his plan is really simple, and you get people back to work and you increase revenues in the government. I mean, it's a really simple plan.
The thing is with Barack Obama's words, all he does is he tries inciting an emotion in others, an emotion of jealousy, an emotion of fear, an emotion of hatred even. And that's all he's doing with every word he says. It's just, the wealthy need to pay more, don't you think? They got enough, don't you think? So people think about it, and it's like, yeah, I'm kind of jealous of them. And that's not right. You want to talk about an immoral nation? Look at us now.
Oh, right. And it's not about, he campaigned on hope and change and bringing us together. But when you start dividing us by race, class, sex, because this war on women nonsense, and actually in the debate, I thought it was a tie from my standpoint, which actually would kind of fit in with the poll where 37% thought, the president had won, and 30% thought Mitt won, and 33% thought that it was a tie. And that was among, I think, women voters.
Much a tie, too. I think Mitt Romney was a little bit more composed as a mature entity out there. I think his substance was great. And I think that Barack Obama, seriously, there were times when he was talking back to Barack Obama, and he was like, I swear, you could see the fire in Barack Obama's eyes. Like, how dare you talk to your president like that?
Yeah. Well,
that's what I was getting. And that is, it's kind of like the you lie comment from the well of the house. Because guess what? Barack Obama's allowed to call everybody else names, but nobody's allowed to call him it. Now, to me, that is not a democracy that he's trying to say he's in favor of.
Right. So and Rick, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
Well, one thing, I don't know if you ladies watch Special Report, but every Wednesday they have a Special Report online with the All-Star panel, and Jim Rosen brought up a very good point. I don't know if any of you had noticed this. I mean, I know I didn't pretty much, but then when Rosen had mentioned it, I was like, I did kind of notice that Obama always had the microphone in his right hand up to his mouth and his left hand, except for a few occasions, you know, like when he would gesture to the audience while he was sitting at his podium to reach over to get a glass of water, his left hand was clenched in a fist and always by his chest as if he were closed up.
No, I hadn't seen that report.
I didn't notice that, but I think...
And what did they say this was... What did they say that meant? Does that mean, like, he's angry?
Either angry or basically just sheltered. I'm gonna take a look at the debate a little later on.
Uh-huh.
See if you can pick
that up.
Yeah, just pick that up, because I admit that I had seen a little bit of it, but then too, I didn't pay that much attention to it at the time. But
well, you know what I didn't like.
How was it when the quarterbacking is?
Right.
What I didn't like at all with Barack Obama's at all. I mean, it's not that I was looking. I was trying to watch it objectively, actually.
It's really
I'm
hard
serious.
To do.
seriously. But do you know what? I'll tell you, when I got really, really absolutely turned aback from Obama immediately. I mean, it's like I'm sitting here being an objective viewer, and immediately when he's like, Candy, can you tell him? Candy, you know, it's like you're the president, and you're sitting here whining like a little, I don't know what to call it, about tell him to stop talking over
the baby.
No, yes, he was so immature. It was an immaturity thing, I'm saying. You know, but the only one who looked like the adult out there. Even the audience didn't act like they were adults.
Yeah.
Do you know who started the clapping?
Yes, that was his
wife. You know what, Billy? I was just about to bring that up. I noticed because somebody had posted a link to Breitbart TV that Michelle Obama actually started the applause.
Yeah, and yeah. The thing is, see, who's going to tell her, hey, there's no applause, even though the whole audience was addressed saying, don't applaud.
Well, and it wasn't the audience. It was somebody in the background, like outside of the right general audience. So you really couldn't see who it was. But it was like that was really rude because they were asked not to do it. And
I'll look it up on Breitbart.com. But they had actually said that it was Michelle Obama that did that.
And the journalist. I heard it was also the journalist. It's like, okay, really.
But see, they were saying, but they addressed the audience when they said no clapping. They didn't say anything to the journalist.
I know, but
and
sure,
that's
you
what
know
their
better.
Technicality is about, you know, how dare them? You know, that was asinine.
Right.
Oh.
And some of the questions, you know, because Crowley got to pick these questions. It's like, you know, the one with the women with equal pay, that's been disproven. That they're not comparing apples to
and
oranges.
And, well, not only that, do you know who that woman was?
Uh-uh.
She's a code pink renegade out there.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I mean, that was so ridiculous because that's not even pertinent to what's going on in our country. And there was a mother that they actually showed on Fox today that has, like, 4 children at home and really wanted some answers about the economy and you know, things that were pertinent. And they didn't get to her. But they got to this woman who was, you know, equal pay.
Yeah.
And
they
had
that audience packed full of surrogates for Obama.
Yes. Yeah. On Twitter, on Facebook, there were a couple of comments today about how the audience had a few Democratic fans in there.
Yeah, and they usually do, but you know, you have to kind of go with that. And I think Romney pretty much handled himself well.
Oh yeah,
when answering most of the questions. The one question, let me go with you, Rick. What was your kind of question that you liked the most during the night, or the one that? You said you didn't see the whole thing.
No. I saw it, but I just. What I meant
was, there a particular question that, you know, caught your interest?
There were a couple of them, and I really wanted Romney to hit on one. I think it was when Obama got the question about the AK-47s, and Romney brought up Fast and Furious. I wanted him to go a little bit further on that.
Yeah, I thought it should have been more deep.
Yeah, but at the same time, we knew that Candy Crowley would be like, now, Governor,
that's a low blow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And another thing, and I know that we're going to be focusing more about this on Monday, will be the whole Libya thing.
Yeah, yeah. I got some clips for that tonight, too, Rick, because, number one, he didn't answer the question.
Right.
Because the guy flat out asked, why did you not have, what was your excuse for not having more security there? Because for you listening out there, I know Billy and I, we talked about this last week, you know, they pulled a special security force of 16 people out of there in August. And there had been bombings in June and May and just all kinds of warning signs that this was not a safe situation. And there had been requests for the additional, to keep those 16, and they pulled them. And somebody needs to answer
them. There's been things that have been found out about that since, and those guys were not pulled from Benghazi. They were pulled from Tripoli.
Yeah, but they're all stationed in Tripoli, and the ambassador just goes to Benghazi for business and then goes back to Tripoli. But they were the ones responsible for security.
The guy at the hearing last week, though, he was talking about from Tripoli ordering more security for Benghazi. And they kept, like, laughing in his face from the State Department saying, you're asking for the moon and the stars. I'm not, you know, don't even bother.
Yeah,
like, they don't have enough money for him. So what did they do, though? They increased his salary by saying it's a more dangerous situation. So they increased what they called danger pay. Like, my husband, he goes over to Iraq and Afghanistan. He gets what's known as danger pay. And depending on the location, he gets a higher rate. And that's all they did for this guy. Instead of getting two or three more men out there, they increased this guy's danger pay. But the thing is, I still think no matter how many men would have been out there, we might have more dead if more people were there.
I think
they should have evaluated with getting everyone out of there. At all. They shouldn't have a consulate in Benghazi. I'm sorry.
Well, the British had pulled theirs because their ambassador had been attacked. Red Cross had pulled out. Why was our ambassador on the ground with just three people in the consulate when this attack occurred?
Why was he there at all? He shouldn't have even been there.
Lots of questions.
It doesn't do it.
So anyway, then Obama answers this question, and he says he called it a terrorist attack or an act of terror in the White House the next day. And it's just like, yeah, okay. And I actually have a clip I'm going to play. It's about a two-minute clip. So I'm going to play for people. These are just various people from the White House talking about the Benghazi and the Libya situation. And this actually, the first one is starts with Hillary Clinton standing by the coffins on the 14th. Which the president lied about that. He went to a fundraiser and a couple fundraisers before he went to stand over the coffins. And this is where we're going to start. So take a listen.
For the State Department and for our country. We've seen the heavy assault on our post in Benghazi that took the lives of those brave men. We've seen rage and violence directed at American embassies.
Condemns in the strongest terms this outrageous and shocking attack. We're working with the government of Libya to secure our diplomats. I've also directed my administration to increase our security at diplomatic posts around the world. And make no mistake, we will work with the Libyan government to bring to justice the killers who attacked our people.
Okay, now those first two, they were just talking about attacks. Now, when he was on the White House, I'm going to play this a little more. I kind of edited this a little bit to get to the part where he actually starts talking about 9/11, and then he says we will not tolerate acts of terror. It was not in reference necessarily to Libya, because, you know, as we know, the media ran with it that, you know, this was video, it's a video, it's a video. But I'm going to finish playing this now.
For the State Department and for our country. We've seen the heavy assault on our post in Benghazi that took the lives of those brave men. We've seen rage and violence directed at American embassies.
Condemns in the strongest terms this outrageous and shocking attack. We're working with the government of Libya to secure our diplomats. I've also directed my administration to increase our security at diplomatic posts around the world. And make no mistake, we will work with the Libyan government to bring to justice the killers who attacked our people. Since our founding, the United States has been a nation that respects all faiths. We reject all efforts to denigrate the religious beliefs of others. But there is absolutely no justification to this type of senseless violence. None. The world must stand together to unequivocally reject these brutal acts.
Over an awful internet video that we had nothing to do with.
This is not a case of protests directed at the United States writ large or at U.S. policy. This is in response to a video that is offensive.
You don't really believe that.
Chris, absolutely I believe that, because in fact it's the case. We've had the evolution of the Arab Spring over the last many months, but what sparked the recent violence was the airing on the internet of a very hateful, very offensive video.
Senior campaign advisor and former White House press secretary, Robert Gibbs. Robert, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Thanks for having me.
Last Sunday, same show, same place, same death, Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, came on this program, and I asked her about the attack on the American consulate in Benghazi. Here's what she said.
The best information and the best assessment we have today is that, in fact, this was not a pre-planned, premeditated attack. That what happened initially was that it was a spontaneous reaction to what had just transpired in Cairo as a consequence of the video.
Why did Ambassador Rice give the American people bad information?
Well, I think, as you heard Ambassador Rice say, the best information that we had at the point in which she gave that answer is the answer that she gave. And look, Ambassador Rice, Chris, has access to far more intelligence data than I do.
Okay, guys.
For the State Department.
That does not sound like they thought it was a terrorist attack. Nor does it sound like the president called it an act of terror, and actually I don't have on there, but he was on The View and on Letterman, and he didn't call it, and this is like a week afterwards, and he still didn't call it an act of terror.
Don't forget the UN.
And the UN.
Yeah, the UN called it at the UN, he basically said that, you know, he established a national religion by saying Muhammad was, you know, never to be touched. You know,
yeah, and we're supposed to, you know, talk about him blaspheming the prophet.
Yeah,
he never said anything about what was it? Six blocks away, they had the crucifix and a bottle of urine. But
he did actually go after. If you listen, he did go over and talk about how they shouldn't do that with Christians either. But you know,
but
I'm sorry.
I'm saying he didn't address that specifically.
No.
He addressed this video over and over again. He never addressed that, not once.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And who thinks this was a setup? She set this up, and she was just waiting for Romney to bring it up, because why else would she have a transcript?
Yeah, right.
Also,
it's interesting to note that when Crowley had interrupted Romney on that was just one of 28 times in which Crowley had interrupted Romney, where she had only interrupted Obama 9 times.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. Candy Crowley, the moderator, is insignificant. She's insignificant. She did her job, and she did a very piss poor one.
yeah.
What needed to be done was, the fact is, this is what someone needed to come out and actually say. Number one, on the economy, when it comes down to Romney's plan, what Romney wants to do is say to, let's use my favorite rich person out there that only pays $100 a year in taxes every year, Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm.
What Mitt Romney is saying, hey, we want to get rid of that little frivolous loophole there that makes it so this millionaire only does have a $100 obligation to our country every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll have more of his money will be taxed at the same rate as everyone else, not just a fee for, you know, basically being a citizen of the United States while he has a stupid bee farm. That is insanity. And that would be something to point out to the taxpayers who don't have bee farms, not trying to encourage them, like Obama would say, go get a bee farm then. That way you'll have, I'm serious.
Yeah, he would.
But do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Obama's
going to close those loopholes. He's going to take away those deductions for them and a 20% across the board kind of tax. And that will actually, millionaires will not pay any less than what they're paying.
On Livia, the thing that needed to be pointed out by everyone is the rhetoric again. See, that's where the word rhetoric, the title of the show, the way you started it, was a good thing. Because the rhetoric, if President Obama thought it was a terrorist attack in the beginning, how come he kept calling them attackers and not terrorists? How come he kept calling them terrorists? He thinks that they need to be, did you see what happened today with the Fed?
I had heard a little bit about it.
Yeah, you know what? They are very, very close-tongued about calling this guy a terrorist, except on Fox. I mean, these people are like, oh, we're still looking into it. We don't want to jump the gun. No, it was an act of terrorism. The guy has already said he wants to see America fall.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that all boils down to the fact that Obama is of the feeling that the war on terror that was started with 9/11 is over simply because, quote-unquote, I killed Bin Laden.
But no, I don't believe that either, Rick. I don't think that's how he feels. I think what he wants to do is he wants to try using rhetoric to, I'm serious. I think he's got knowledge of what's going on over there, and he knows a lot more about it than he wants us to know is what I'm trying to get at.
By the way, ladies, he's trying
to hide it. But he's not doing his job. He's trying to hide it. Because, you know, the thing that I found out the other day is, you know, his family in Kenya? They are Muslim. Okay, whether he's a Muslim or not is irrelevant. They are. But they're not just Muslims. You want to know who they bred? They bred Al-Qaeda, the type of Muslims they are. They bred Osama bin Laden was a member of their faction of Muslims, of Islam.
Just damn.
Now, isn't that something that someone would kind of say, okay, even if he's not a Muslim, even if he has nothing to do with it, push that all aside. His family does.
Oh, yeah.
His family wants, you know what they're doing right now? They've got this, his grandmother, Sarah, has a foundation over there in Kenya, and her foundation is supposed to be for widows and orphans. Isn't that like the popular thing you see, widows and orphans? But all they're doing is they're taking people in the community and they're sending them to Mecca colleges in Mecca that breed, I want to say it's called like the Mujahideen or something. It's really a weird name. of the breed of Islam they are. But he knows. He knows more than you guys want to give him credit for. He's not stupid.
No, no, I'm not saying he is. I think everything he has done has actually been deliberate.
No, I didn't mean by you guys. I just meant the people.
People,
the general public who just thinks, oh, well, you know, he is oblivious to all this. No, he's not. He's not oblivious. And he uses and chooses his words very well. He didn't say terrorist, not because he didn't know it was terrorism. He chose not to say terrorist because he wants to put a screen over it. He's trying to help hide what's going on behind.
Kind of like with the shootings at Fort Hood, that he refused to label a terrorist attack when the guy was obviously a terrorist.
That was definitely work violence.
Now those soldiers' families can't get benefits because of the way he labeled it.
Right.
And that's really sad that we have a president that's not concerned about the families of the soldiers. He's more concerned with his rhetoric to try to promote Islam as the religion of peace, that he can't call it a terrorist attack. You know? Plus, that's what he's running on. You know, I got Al-Qaeda. We're safer today. Well, people, take a look at the Middle East. It ain't looking safer to me. I mean, we got Syria shooting into Turkey. We've got men in Jordan right now to protect Jordan. And Turkey shooting back at Syria. Iran is closer to a nuclear bomb. We got the Muslim Brotherhood in power in Egypt. I mean, this is not... Al-Qaeda apparently is breeding in Libya. And, you know, it's not a safer place. But I'm going to go back to this Benghazi thing just one more time, because, you know, he's trying to say he called it a terrorist attack. Yet then Carney, you know, who speaks for him, you know, from the White House, September 12th, he says, you know, Obama's trying to pretend like he called this an act of terror. But on the 20th, Jay Carney said, he was asked, can you or have you called it a terrorist attack before? Have you said that? Mr. Carney, I haven't. But I mean, people attacked our embassy. It's an act of terror by definition. Yes, I just hadn't heard you. Mr. Carney, it doesn't have to do with what date it occurred. No, I just hadn't heard the White House say that this was an act of terrorism or a terrorist attack. And Carney says, I don't think the fact that we hadn't is not, as our NCTC director testified yesterday, a number of different elements appear to have been involved in the attack, including individuals connected to militant groups that are prevalent in eastern Libya, particularly in the Benghazi area. We are looking at indications that individuals involved in the attack may have had connections to Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda affiliates, in particular Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Okay, so this is on the 20th. This is coming out of the White House. This is a spokesman for the president, and yet the president called it an act of terror on the 12th. No, I don't think so, and I don't care how they try to spin this. You know, the media was all over the place blaming a video. We bought $70,000 worth of airtime in Pakistan to apologize for this video. I mean, there's a major cover-up going on, Billy. Major cover-up.
You know what happened with that whole thing? The guy who tried attacking us today was from Pakistan. You know that, right?
Bangladesh, I thought they said.
Pakistan? I think so. I'm pretty sure. It is Bangladesh, but yeah, Pakistan is what they called him, a Pakistani man. So I don't know.
Okay.
And what he did, or what that did to the whole, you know, Pakistan nation, who teaches their children to hate America anyway, they angered them more. They actually lit that fire. It's like there was gas already spread on the ground, and what did they do? They threw a match right on top of it.
Yeah.
By putting that stupid ad out there, because, you know what? They didn't even know about the damn video until our country promoted it. Did you know the first day that they brought that video up, there had been like 4,000 views of it. 4,000 when I looked at it. And
yeah,
within, I'd say, about 2-3 hours after they did it, there were over 700,000 views of it. And I'm like, what the hell's happening here?
Yeah, and then it went up to 2 million. And it was like, we promoted the terror. Our administration promoted terror in 50 countries. Because the rioting was at first just in Egypt. And then, of course, we had this pre-planned. This attack went on for 6 hours, people. And if we had had extra people in the capital of Tripoli with like helicopters or whatever they needed, they could have got to Benghazi. But we didn't. The two of those people in there weren't even attached to the ambassador. But, you know, this was a pre-planned attack. They knew where our safe houses were. In fact, the vehicle that was carrying the people away from the consulate were going to go to this other safe place, and then they got suspicious because somebody was waving them in, and then they took fire from 2 feet from their car. So this was a planned attack. It was a terrorist attack, and this was not about some video about Muhammad. No. We had warnings. We knew they were going to riot. We knew they were going to
We should have
wow in Egypt because they told us this like before. I mean, like on the 4th and then 2 days before, we knew they were going to riot in Egypt. I mean, this was not some spontaneous thing. In fact, that one of the brothers of one of the second in command to Al Qaeda was actually in Egypt. They have pictures of him there, you know, at this supposed spontaneous, you know, eruption over a video. And, I'm just tired of the lies.
If it was spontaneous, okay, if it was spontaneous, why is it our embassy in Egypt, in Cairo, closed its doors early, told everyone to go home? What about that makes people, and put out that damn announcement saying, we, you know, forbids free speech, whatever they were saying in it.
We're sorry if we hurt your feelings. It's like, really? Really? No, we're not. I'm not sorry if I hurt your feelings. I have free speech in America.
But that means, you know, spontaneity means it happens all of a sudden and without any warning. They were warned. So how is they dare call it spontaneous? I don't understand how these people think.
And how do they get away? Well, I know how they get away with it. The media covers for them. But, you know, how do they? I know they do this in Chicago, but, you know, it's a smaller scale. How does he think he's going to get away with this on a national scale? You know, well, they tried to shut down the internet. If they had done that, you know, they might have got away with it. But they tried to shut down Fox News. They tried to shut down Limbaugh. People, you need to be watching because this has all happened. They pushed Glenn Beck off of Fox News. He's got a radio show. Now, these aren't people that I normally listen to, but apparently my views are very similar to them.
Glenn Beck has his own website called The Blaze.
But he was pushed off of Fox. I think it was Media Matters?
Yeah.
Media Matters,
which has since been connected to the Obama administration through emails.
I think the Daily Caller has those emails, if I'm not mistaken.
And it's funded by George Soros.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to shut up the conservative, and we have to really be vigilant this election. And this is why it's so important. It's so important. I get so frustrated with the people voting third party because Mitt Romney's not conservative enough. Because I don't think they understand what we're actually facing here.
You know what, Brenda? You read about that because on Facebook there's a group called General Election 2012. There are a lot of third party, you know, supporters in that group, and you know at first I tried being, you know, friendly and try to talk to them and everything, but today I mean I was like, you know what, I had it, and I actually said that I'm going to keep posting the same thing for the next 20 days if you don't, you know why, because as my friend Dana Smearman of the Conservative Watchtower says, I am about victory. If you're not about victory, feel free to block me.
Right, right. And here's the thing. You know, no third-party candidate is going to win this election. if we're not, if they get into office, because, you know, he says he's running a conservative platform. We're also working on many Tea Party things. I got to throw this in here. Here's my Murdoch ad. He's Tea Party. Well, he's not really Tea Party, but Tea Party supports him.
Washington way of bigger government and more wasteful spending, Joe Donnelly and Barack Obama are perfectly synchronized. The $700 billion Wall Street bailout? Yes. Raising the debt ceiling to spend trillions we don't have? You bet. The job-killing government takeover of healthcare, perfect again. But we can't afford it. Donnelly and Obama, perfect for each other, perfectly wrong for Indiana.
I'm Richard Murdoch, and I approve this message.
Okay, I just had to get that in there because I'm from Indiana. And the Tea Party is working very hard here in Indiana to get him elected. But, you know, here's my point. If Romney gets in there and all of a sudden turns big government like the rest of them, then we look at forming a third party for the 2016 election, and we continue to push the Tea Party in the midterms, because it's going to take a while to get things to change in Washington, but we've got to see that they're working to make those changes.
Exactly.
But, you know, no third party is going to win this election.
No.
And unfortunately, what if it comes to 1% in Ohio, and that 1% is the people who voted third party? You know,
I have to say, Ross Perot did come out in favor of Romney yesterday, and he ran as a third party candidate.
Yes,
in
did.
What was it, 96?
92.
Yeah. And the thing is, I would hope that that gives some of those who would vote third party a little encouragement not to.
Me too. And I hope they'll change their mind. And
I would
actually ask that everybody go see Obama or rent Obama 2016 if you haven't seen it. Very, very interesting, and it's just a biography. It's nothing but facts presented.
And of course, another movie that I highly recommend is Atlas Shrugged, because, I mean, to me, just seeing what was up there, and especially some of the signs, like there was
the
gasoline $42 a gallon, and.
Yeah.
One thing that really got me was when the one guy was writing on the board after Directive 10289 was in place, America, born 1776, died yesterday. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
That right there was stunning.
Now let me ask you this. Rick, did you read the book?
I'm on my fourth reading, and one thing that, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more about it on Red, Red, and Blue this Saturday, but one thing that I noticed is that, I mean, I say that the book and the movie jive, I'd say roughly about 50%, you know. You know, because, like, I mean, like, I always thought that the movie and the book, you know, like other, you know, like in other movies, like, say, The Wizard of Oz, you know, how like, if you're watching it, you can go right to the book and read it through.
Uh-huh.
Not so with the Atlas Shrugged, you know, because...
It was a 1,200-page book.
it's a 1,200-page book.
Well, but what I was saying is, in part one, they actually started off with Midas Mulligan vanishing. And in the book, it was like, you know, the first words were, who was John Galt?
Uh-huh.
And also Eddie Willers talking with the bum, but... And I mean, I was like, I mean, like I said, the book followed the movie pretty much, but there were a few deviations of it.
Well, see, because this is what I was sitting there, and I had just read this not like a month ago or so, and I didn't see the first one, but I'm sitting there thinking, is this movie just interesting to me because it's bringing these characters to life for me? And I tried to take myself out of the book to see how it would play outside of the book, but I couldn't do that.
So
I was just wondering if you'd read the book and how, you know,
yeah.
it was really hard for me to get my head out of the book, because I'm picturing the scenes. Oh yeah, that's where, you know, and my head's just going around and around, so that was just, I was wondering if anybody out there has seen the movie and hasn't read the book and has an opinion, you can call in and I'd like to hear your opinion, because I was really trying to say, I was sitting there, I wonder how this plays to somebody who hasn't read the book.
Now, my mom, who had gone with me yesterday, she had not read the book.
But she
did see Anna Shrugged Part 1 last Monday, because I had sent her a copy of it.
Uh-huh.
And all throughout Part 2, you know, she kept elbowing me, and she kept saying that the reason why, what happened in the movie is the result of crooked politicians and greedy corporate owners. And also throughout the movie, you know, she kept saying, this reminds me a lot of the Republican Congress. So what I did was I turned to her and I'm like, Democratic president.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. The fact that you say Democratic president isn't going to mean anything. What you need to do is show her the DNC when they did the vote on the floor.
Definitely.
And say that is not democracy right there. Because guess what? The no's were louder than the yays.
Absolutely.
They called it for the yays, and that's exactly how they've treated Republicans the entire 4 years. Whenever a Republican talks, they tune them out, they ignore them, and say, we win.
Definitely.
That's how Democrats work. That's what you need to show your mom. Your mom is never going to, I mean, honestly, my mom and my sister, they would never even sit down and watch Atlas Shrugged, because Atlas Shrugged is too real. Atlas Shrugged has too much truth to it. And Ayn Rand, I actually did my studying up on Ayn Rand before I even read the book. Or, I mean, after I read the book.
Uh-huh.
Altruism, you know, I always tried figuring it out, because I never saw it as a bad thing. But you can tell Ayn Rand thought it was a very bad thing to be altruistic.
Yes.
And all it means to me to be altruistic is to be selfless. Be very, but the exact opposite is absolute selfishness versus being selfless in a way of still thinking of yourself. That's an objective. You know, you think of, you don't sacrifice yourself for, you know, a total stranger necessarily. You sacrifice yourself for your children. And, you know, my perspective of Ayn Rand, I actually watched like an hour interview with Phil Donahue from years ago.
Hmm.
It's Phil Donahue.
Yeah. Well, ladies, I think I'm going to have to pull the ripcord on this, because CC Rocks' show is going to be starting up at in about 12 minutes. He's going to be good. He's going to be out until about 11 o'clock if you want to head over after the show.
Well, just follow
my Rick. Hi. And thanks for joining us.
No problem. Have a nice one, lady.
Okay, we'll see you, Rick. But, yeah, that's Atlas Shrugged. I really enjoyed it. Of course, there's a part 3, so I was very disappointed.
I bought part 1 and I kept thinking, okay, I'm not going to buy just part 2. I'm going to wait until they come out with the whole set. And I because I want the whole story all at once to see how it matches the book. And I did read the book years ago.
Yeah.
And I think they did a pretty good job, but I'll tell you the one thing, I still hate Dagny. I hated her in the book. I hated her in the book, and I didn't, I don't hate her. I mean, I hate the character. To me, she is just too, I want to say she's put into too much of a perfect spotlight, and she actually does have flaws. There's definitely flaws about her. Number one, she acts way too masculine. even in the book, especially in the book. They painted her, or Ayn Rand painted her way more masculine, you know. And it just doesn't fit. It doesn't jive with me. So I hate that character. And I love Reardon, though.
He's
a great guy. But I even liked Wyatt. I thought Wyatt was cool. You know, the old Texas guy. He was just, you know, the coolest guys out there. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not a fan of Jake.
of the main girl character. Okay, well, we got Barbara calling in, so let's say hello. Yeah. Hey, Barbara, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Hi, Barb.
Hi, Jolie. Hey,
what you got to say?
I always have a lot to say.
Oh, well, that's okay.
One thing that gets me back, well, from last night's debate, now that Candy went and fact-checked her lies.
Oh, I know.
To save the president. How many people don't watch the news to
right.
know that that was a lie? So they think that Romney's a liar and the president's this wonderful thing.
Yeah. I was really upset with that last night because there's 70 million people turning in for the debates. And what good does it do Romney when she pulled that kind of stunt and then says, oh, well, I was wrong. Well,
that's
there's
exactly
70 million
the whole administration.
People.
That's the whole administration. Don't you get it? Don't you see that? It's like them coming out and saying it's about a movie when it really wasn't. It's how that whole administration works. They come out, they say something just to get everybody's attention on this focus that they want them to focus on. Meanwhile, it's the whole don't watch my right hand and see what my left hand's doing, you know?
Right.
It's a smoke and mirrors. The whole administration has been that way, and it is not going to change. You know, I'm not surprised at the whole thing. I wouldn't say that the whole Candy Crowley, everything was staged. They planned it exactly to the T of what it is.
Well, that's very sad to say, but that's our media today. But yeah, Barbara, that's an excellent point, because I was just like, I just couldn't believe it when she did that, because I'm like, there's 70 million people watching this, and she has to go and pull that stunt, and it wasn't even right what she said, and now they're talking about, oh, it's all in the content, or it's all in the, what are they calling it today, something ridiculous, when we know, either way, he's lied, because he sent people out for a week afterwards telling us it was a video, so, you know, either way, he's lied, and he needs to be held accountable for that, for lying to the American people, because your president is supposed to be he's supposed to be making you safe, and you want to know he's got your back. Well, we don't know he's got our back because he lies, just like Israel doesn't know that he's got their back, because everything he does suggests that he doesn't. So that's pretty frustrating. But, you know, I did some fact-checking. Almost everything Romney said last night was true. And I'm not sure that there was one thing that Obama said that was true last night.
But the thing is, all Obama kept talking about is invoking an emotion in people. It was, you know, I just think that, you know, if we got the richest among us, they should pay more. That's pretty much his whole standard.
Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Line.
I'm actually just waiting for my, I'm looking for it. My boss last night posted how great Obama did.
Oh, my.
Oh, I like how Mitt, this is what he wrote. I like how Mitt answered a question about guns by talking about encouraging people to get married before having babies. He must have been stoned.
I think that was talking about violence and how families could help with that.
Right.
Not getting rid of the guns, but.
No, I'm saying Romney actually had a good answer there. He did.
Well, he did.
He was talking about keeping, the question was about keeping AK-47s out of the hands of our, you know,
like
people
citizens.
On the street.
Yeah.
Basically long gun bans they want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And technically they're already banned is what he said. But in order to keep our kids from wanting to get their hands on it, we need better parents. We need better, strong families.
To stop
and that's
the violence.
True. What the heck is wrong with that answer? There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, Obama went and talked about the same thing.
And then, he doubled down on it. But next thing you know, the one thing I have to say that Romney did there, the jab he got at Obama, the one thing that people might end up looking up about information about today is Fast and Furious.
I'm not so sure because I think we're down to the polls today had Mitt Romney at 41% and Obama at 45% nationwide.
Which poll?
That was Gallup. Gallup poll today.
You're saying Obama got a bump last night?
No, I'm saying Romney was at 51% and Obama was at 46%. And that's the 46% that Mitt Romney was talking about, that they want their food stamps and they want their free stuff or their hardcore Democrats who aren't going to vote Republican no matter what you say.
Right.
And that's what Romney was saying at this $50,000 a plate fundraiser where they were talking strategy, where there's a certain group of people that no matter what you say or do, they're not going to vote for you.
Right.
Because, you know, it's all over Twitter today. There's people talking about shooting Governor Romney, assassinating him if he tries to take their food stamps. That's outrageous. That's wrong, and it's outrageous. And yet, that's the group of people he was talking about. They're not going to vote for it. And, they're trying to use that against him.
Well, those are the people who don't deserve it anyway, because to me, they're un-American. And that's treasonous.
Well, it is. I want to know who's looking into it. Because they're
just going to say that.
Yeah.
I wonder if they are, because the Black Panthers got away with all that crap, too.
Well, yes. And they're going to get away with more this election, because they're planning to do the same thing. And unfortunately, we have a racist for a Department of Justice. Attorney, and he's a racist, because he thinks blacks can't do crime on whites. That's not racist. I'm sorry. Yes, it is. You don't have to be a minority to have somebody be racist to you.
Oh, but they've been oppressed and they deserve to, lash out. That's how you see this.
And that's what Romney was saying about a certain group of people who were going to vote for Obama no matter what.
Yep.
They're victims and they are entitled. And, it's a truth. It's a truth. It's not, and here Obama's trying to use it against him. I don't think it's working very well. And I actually thought that was kind of funny. If you listen to Obama's closing statement, he said, I want to work for the 47%. So what's that say about us 53%?
Yeah, that has to pay it.
But Romney said he wanted to work for all 100% of Americans.
Right. But listen to Obama. Listen to what he said. He actually said it in a way that you could take it if you wanted to, that he was just going to work for that 47%.
Well, that's about all he's working for, because he ain't doing shit for me.
I know,
sorry.
Either.
Were you going to play
my insurance and stuff and everything's going up, gas is going up, groceries are going up. It's like, you're not helping the middle class. So, I'm never going to get food stamps. My kids don't qualify for government help with their student loans. It's crazy, and yet.
He's military, I'll tell you, when he talks about, he's talking about the military in that 47%. No, he's not.
No, he's not.
I'll tell you, the active, or the ones overseas are the ones who, their funds are tax-free. Yeah, I'll tell you straight out.
I have no problem with that.
It's tax-free. But Obama's trying to spin it to say, Romney's saying because they aren't paying any taxes, the military isn't paying any taxes. And he's pointing that out to people who are liberal like my sister.
Right.
Because my sister, knowing my husband's going overseas, is very mad that she's going to be, he's going to not have to pay any taxes. And I'm not, thus because of, me being military family, I don't have to pay taxes. And that is not absolutely true because we still have other taxes to pay. But at the same time, his income from that is not going to be taxed. Because, you know, like any work I do gets taxed. Any other work that he has done for the year is taxed. That kind of stuff, you know, just his military pay won't be taxed next year.
Right. And Mitt Romney was talking about the military, and he wasn't talking about the elderly, and he wasn't talking about truly disabled people. He's talking about these people out there saying, if you take my food stamps, I'm going to assassinate you. You know, he's talking about the woman out there that's got 30 free Obama phones. And these aren't just regular phones, folks. These are Blackberries. Okay,
yep.
They're handing out Blackberries. And this program spent up over $1 billion. And who do they tax?
Exactly.
The middle class, the people with the cell phones. And, you know, yeah, they take it out as a fee. For your, on my cell phone bill, so they
uh-huh.
can give some woman 30
yeah.
free phones.
It's make me a product, a cell phone. Give me the product free, and then pay me to use your product because you have to pay the taxes on paying for that. I mean, it's like so circular. It's pathetic.
Yeah,
it gets
and it's
you
like,
spinning, and then it gets you dizzy.
And yet, they couldn't find $1 trillion to cut out of the budget. Okay, they showed this thing on Fox where they had this mechanical squirrel that goes back and forth, and they were just there's like $19 billion in nonsense projects that do nothing for nobody, except for maybe the people who they're paying to make these silly little robots that go back and forth. You know, that's $19 billion. You've got another billion with this cell phone. You know, there's $20 billion right there before you even get into anything. And then we got PBS funding, you know, whatever that is, in millions. And I bet there's just thousands of programs like that that could easily be cut without doing damage to any of the national security and that the private sector could actually pick up. And yet they couldn't find it.
I want us to do, as Conservative Nation Radio and stuff, I have an idea, but I want to get together with you guys about it. I want to start a pack of a slow down the clock pack. Because the thing I noticed, and I don't know if anybody else paid attention back in 2004, but when they would show the debt clock, and a lot of people on the left were showing the debt clock back then, of course.
It ticked
like a minute hand on a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look at it, it spins faster than the second hand on a Swiss Army or a Swiss watch, you know? And I would just want, I just want to point out to people that we need to at least start slowing down the clock so we can at least bring it to a halt slowly. You don't stop your car by screeching on the brakes, especially on a slippery road, because that's where we are.
Right.
Right.
And what we need to do is slow it down. Take your foot off the brake, meaning stop the spending.
And start it in reverse, because I think we're paying $240 billion that we pay in interest every year?
Yes.
Or is it month or whatever?
My children each owe $51,000 to the government, and they're only 9 and 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When there's children not born yet that are going to start out owing $51,000 to the government, why? What did they ever do?
Yeah, you know, and it's not, despite what they say, it's not just Social Security and Medicare. There is so much waste in Washington, and they need to cut the waste. And
yeah,
then,
the waste needs to be the first thing cut is all I'm saying. You start incrementally. You start with the little things like Big Bird. Get rid of the damn fluffy animal that...
Can you believe?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, though. I mean, I love Big Bird, too, but, you know...
They can survive without it, though. That's the problem.
He's the 1%.
Yes, he is,
actually.
Stuff now.
They pay Big Bird, the man who plays or whoever plays Big Bird, that's $300,000 a year in a salary. That's a lot more than I make. Okay.
Oh, my God.
He started out with only public funding. He got, you know... $40,000 a year or whatever it was. That's how he started out. Now he's up to $300,000. It's time to cut off the spigot.
Right. He can fund himself.
He can. But I'm just saying that's where you need to start. You have to start with the little things.
Exactly.
And you don't just, like I said, you put your stitches on one stitch at a time. You don't, you know, just use a sewing machine.
Right,
how many
right.
sisters do you see using a sewing machine in the operating room?
Apple guy. Anyway.
Oh, don't even go there. I've seen people get stapled. That's just nasty.
That's what they use more than, occasionally.
Oh, my aunt had her stomach stapling absolutely videotaped, and we went over to the house one time, and she was actually watching it. I was like, are you serious? You know, and she's like, I'm so happy. You know,
But yeah, this budget thing, guys, like if you were at home and you were budgeting, saying, you know, hey, you know, we're losing this much amount of money, we need to tighten our belts. What are you going to cut first? Like I told my husband, what are we going to cut first? Well, we're not going to eat out as much.
Right.
Even though that's not a $500 a month bill, you know, it's a smaller bill, but you're going to cut that first because that's what you don't need. You know, you have to pay your utilities, and you have to pay if you have a house payment and you, car payments and those kind of things. You have to pay for your insurance, but you don't have to go out to eat. And if it came down to it, I don't need my cell phone. I'd probably die now without my internet. But no, I really wouldn't die without my internet. You know, these are not needs. These are actually extras. And this is what the government needs to do. First of all, get rid of all the things you don't need. And then work on what you've got left and see where we have to make the cuts. But I think Mitt Romney can do that. As a businessman, I think he can look at that and objectively say, we don't need this.
I know he can.
I totally agree with he can.
Yes. I mean, he's done it. And the thing is, I wish they would have gotten a little bit more in depth about the whole GM thing. Because
Candy wouldn't let him. Candy would not give him follow-up.
I know. That's what really upset me. That's what I'm saying. That debate last night was rigged. It was just rigged to be against him. What he needs to do is somehow, some way, I don't know if you've seen that ad that's with the coal miners or something.
Yeah.
They have like a ad saying, Obama, why did you lie?
Yeah.
They need to get the people from GM, from that, what was that other, the ones who lost like 40% of their pensions. I can't remember the name of them. But he needs to get them to do an ad and say, Obama, why did you lie?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It needs to come out that Obama saved nothing with GM. All he did was hurt the taxpayer.
Right.
Exactly. And they filed bankruptcy anyway, but we still had to keep the pensions intact because he did it for the unions. He did it to pay back his cronies in the unions, and they still owe us taxpayers $24 billion. And,
you mean the ones that are going bankrupt?
Yeah, Chrysler and GM, yep. And they asked the government to give up their portion of the stocks, because I think they want to do what they want to do, because, you know, they made him make this Chevy Volt, which is just a total disaster, and, you know, cost us $240,000 a car for them to make, because he's trying to push his green energy. He's trying to pick the winners and the losers, and like Romney said, you know, he's picking losers, like $90 billion.
Huh? This is exactly the thing. With the green energy and Tolindras and the electric car. Guess what? They tried it before. They tried it in the 1800s. They tried it in the 1920s. It failed. And it never made it to the free market because it failed. So now we've got a communist type bureaucracy that's saying, okay, it failed in the private sector. Let's take taxpayer money to make it not be a failure and show that the government can do it better. It's not going to happen, though.
It won't happen.
It already is failing.
I think Germany is actually going back to coal because I think they found out it doesn't work.
They had another one. Well, you know, Obama was saying, well, look at it, it's working in China. It isn't. It isn't working in China
it's not working anywhere.
The only thing that's working in China is the fact that their population isn't growing because they're aborting all their babies.
Right.
Exactly.
That's the only thing that is working out there.
Exactly. Well, and back to the debate, and here's the thing, you know, this makes me so mad. You know, the only thing she wanted to fact check was, you know, this Libya thing, which just is irritating because she had all the questions ahead of time. She knew what questions she was going to ask. And the one time that Romney got in Obama's face is he wanted him to answer because Obama's trying to say we've increased oil output.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, outright lie. Yes, the production was up, but it was under permits that, and actually production isn't up. It's down on federal lands. But, it's more because of the states that don't have the federal bureaucracy
at all. But oil production in the United States has gone up on private land. It has increased from what it was, but it is not higher than it can be because he keeps restricting them even. Even the output on private lands is limited.
Yeah, and actually the figure is the leases on federal land from Bush to Obama dropped 42%.
Absolutely, yeah. They still doubled down on that. He did not, they like to play on the words. That's why I'm so glad you used the rhetoric theme or meme tonight. Because I was watching one of his surrogates say, well, he didn't ban production of oil. No, he didn't. No, but the permits that he has signed are only for private land. They are not for public land. And then what does he do as soon as he signs those permits? He sends the freaking EPA out after them.
Right.
Yep.
It's like three different problems. We've got them holding up the permits. We've got the EPA giving so many hoops and regulations that they can't afford. And this goes for coal, too. They can't afford to operate. And so it's the, it's the permits, it's the regulations, and it's the EPA. And there's coal plants shutting down all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Obama's out there saying, oh, I'm good for coal. It's like, really?
He's good for nothing.
But it's got to be clean coal. You can't walk out of a coal mine dirty.
Yeah. Well, me and my husband, too, we were wondering, did Candy show Obama all the questions before the debate?
Oh, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, really. The thing is,
supposedly not, but
one thing I like about debates, though, is even if one side has inside knowledge, you can't predict that the other side that doesn't have inside knowledge isn't going to trump them. Because I think that's what happened with last night. Obama probably had some of his answers already drawn out in his head, even if he knew some of those questions. But he had to respond to what Romney was saying, no matter what.
Yeah, but what he didn't have is a plan, and he hasn't laid out a plan. The only thing he does is, and he hasn't done in his 4 years, he's blocking the Republican plan to reform Medicare, but he's never put his own plan out there for them to actually review and try to work on.
And
people
don't
understand. He's not offering anything.
I don't understand why they keep trying to say that privatizing Social Security is a bad thing.
It wasn't in Chile.
No, that's what I'm saying. It wouldn't be here either. I think putting our Social Security funds into the stock market is not a bad thing.
Well, it's because they want to keep the money in Washington so they can have control over it, so they can spend it on their friends and their cronies and their lobbyists.
At the same time, it would be a bad thing because there's vultures out there like Soros who would buy up our Social Security, and he would make the stock market tank because of all his little dealings. I would not go 100% into saying he had nothing to do with hurting our banking system in the first place. If you look at, I was looking at some of his portfolio purchases and stuff like that over the years. I didn't realize I could get that stuff online until I looked up Warren Buffett. And I noticed, the thing is with my husband who owns stock in Walmart, and I have stock in Pepsi from my grandmother. I mean, my grandmother bought stock in Pepsi from when it was $3 a share. And that's a long, long time ago, just so you know. I inherited it when she died. And I watched the stocks because I like seeing what the prices of those things are. But for some reason I looked up Warren Buffett's portfolio. I just typed in Warren Buffett, stock portfolio, and lo and behold on Google you can go. And then I looked up George Soros's, and I looked at 2006 in particular, He made a ton of purchases of stock in Bank of America, in Goldman Sachs, in what's that, AIG?
Yep.
He purchased, he went from like having 200,000 shares of each of those to up over a million in less than a year. And I was like thinking, I wonder if this had anything to do with it. That's all, you know, it was like.
Well, you know, it's a goal of his to bring down America.
Mm-hmm.
It's a goal. That it's his social experiment.
I think it's his anti-colonialist type experiment.
If you start doing it on Bush's watch, then of course nobody's going to want another Republican.
Right.
Right.
They and that's how he's been manipulating.
Not only that, he had Pelosi in the House to help him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. That's when it happened, was when Pelosi was in the House.
And he's got the media. You know, and these are all actually people listening, because you'll know me, the communist goals from 1958 in the Naked Communists. They're posted in the 1963 Congressional Record. One of the things they have to do is get control of the media, get control of either one party or both. What's that?
When you watched the Biden debate, did you think of Rule 5 of Rules for Radicals?
No, I didn't. But I was just too mad at him being so rude that it was like, this is so
pathetic.
That's
just it. That's exactly what Rule 5 is. Ridicule your enemy.
Yeah.
Ridicule him. Make him look small.
Well, I thought he made himself look small. And as I told my children, if any of my adult children acted that way, I would smack them upside the head and make them go apologize. Because that's not how you behave. It's like, really? This is our vice president acting like
a two-year-old.
Yeah.
The same thing as a president yesterday who acted like a four-year-old.
Yeah,
your portfolio is bigger than mine.
It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. But you're right. That was, you know.
It was like, now you're Jack Kennedy? You know, no, he never said he was Jack Kennedy.
And that didn't play well, because that's not what he was saying. But Biden knew he was going to say that, because Jack Kennedy actually did decrease taxes.
Yes, and not only that.
Create revenue.
I love the words he said about raising all the ships at the same time. I can't remember it, though. It had something to do with shifting the tides and creating a big enough tide to lift all the ships at once, not to, you know, just lift a few, which is what that will do. It will, you have no idea the way that when you increase the number of people, okay, it's like, when I lived with my mom, let's say, she had three jobs at a time sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what she did, though, she did that to avoid going on to the government program.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 15, when I was 12, I had my own, I had a paper route, and I worked at Jung's, it was a cornfield where I detasseled corn. I took all that silk stuff off of the corn that we were going to sell. And I got paid, I got paid 40 cents per ear, or 10 cents per ear, or something like that, or I can't remember. I think it was actually 40 cents per dozen that I did, something like that. But I brought money in, and by having more people bringing money into the house, my mom didn't really have to take on and keep that third job, so she could leave, you know, let go of it. And that's all that Romney's kind of saying is, we can take away some of the burden of the debt, so to speak, by having more taxpayers into the government, by adding another person participating, like I participated when I was old enough to.
Right. Yeah,
that's all it is. But the thing is, there are too many people out there who see their mom struggling, working three jobs, and sitting on their butts playing video games.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
Idiots.
Unfortunately. And a lot of younger kids that don't want to work, they think it's beneath them to work at a McDonald's.
Hey, my son is only 10, and he is excited. He wants to get working. My son, actually, I'm kind of iffy about it. He wants to join the military.
Oh.
And he's only 10?
Yeah, I think it's because of his dad.
He's got a few years to really think it through.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully by then it'll be a safer place, Billy.
Never happened. There's always going to be Muslims. There's always going to be Islam. There's always going to be the belief in, you know, wanting to kill Christians and Jews. And that's always going to be out there because it's been out there since 600 BC or AD.
Right. Not going to go away.
It's never going to go away. Just like bullying. I mean, I have to admit, that's one thing I've been kind of getting a little frustrated with out here, is seeing all this anti-bullying legislation stuff coming across my nose. And I'm like, I am absolutely against it. I'm sorry. Bullies are bullies, but guess what? There's three choices we have in life, people. We either let those things that confront us win over us. That's what happens when people they become depressed, clinically insane, or kill themselves. Or we become stronger because of it. Or we let it help define our character. And let it, we either become what the bully is telling us we are, or, you know, there's three choices. I have seen many people who have been bullied turn out to be some of the most successful people ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also seen, I'm seeing it all the time by these children. I mean, this one little girl in Canada who just killed herself, Amanda Todd. It's terrible. It's tragic. But you know what I saw in that whole story? I saw a little girl who hated herself. And she didn't get the help she needed.
We're back to a parenting issue.
Exactly.
There's always been bullies. There always will be bullies. But you just need to tell your child. You need to be talking to your child. You need to be telling your child, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones. Words will never hurt me. You know, we say that all the time. You know?
But that's not, it's not even just the words. It was, I think she hated herself for her own actions because she did things she didn't want to do. I looked at her own page one day when this first started. And there's a picture of her kissing a girl. And it says, this is her best friend. She didn't want to do it, but everyone else is doing it, so she did it. And I thought to myself, if she didn't want to do it, say no. There's two letters out there. And I think it had more to do with peer pressure and society than even her parents. Because she was being pressured into doing things she really didn't want to do.
Yeah,
even flashing her boobs online like she did. And going out and sleeping with a guy who had a girlfriend like she did.
Well, she had some kind of thing going on where she needed attention and she needed to feel wanted.
Right.
So we're back to a parenting issue or some kind of relationship issue in that family. Because, you know, like I have my youngest son is like, he could care less what anybody thinks about him. Okay.
Right.
Six foot four, you know, 240. You know, he wears Cookie Monster shirts to school. He's a senior in high school. It's like, he doesn't care. It's like, you know what, he's going to do his own thing. And you just have to, you know, I think a lot of it is completely parenting. And when you try to tell your kids when they're young that everybody gets a trophy, everybody's a winner, there are no losers.
Right.
You create children who cannot handle it.
Right.
When things aren't going the way, you know,
when they don't feel like a winner. Because not everybody feels like a winner when you're saying everyone's a winner.
And
Not everybody feels that way. Go ahead, Barbara.
It does start with home because it's up to the parents to build the self-esteem of their child. When I was growing up, my mother was jealous of me. I was the only girl on my dad's side of the family and the only girl, and I had three brothers. So I had no self-esteem because my mother really didn't do much to help it. So, yeah, I went out and I did things for negative attention as long as it was something. And then I had two kids, and my life was kind of on the ugly side. I was miserable, and, you know, something kind of snapped in my head. And I kind of woke up and grew up and said, I can't go on like this. My
right.
kids are gonna be taken away from me. So
right.
I never acted on that wanting to kill myself. Never acted on it. And I did. I went out and I sought some help.
Yeah. I know how that is. I mean, I'm serious. It comes down. And see, that's why I get a little bit upset when I see people who actually go through with suicide. Whenever
uh-huh.
they literally go through with any kind of suicide, instead of crying for help, like, well, like she did twice, she overdosed on some sort of drug one time, and she drank bleach. My God. It's terrible. And those were her cries for help, but she wasn't getting the help she needed somehow. Somehow she hated herself, because you want to know what I saw? I saw a broken little girl who did something she couldn't take back.
Right.
She couldn't take it back, and it was out there forever, like she said. You know, like I said, I saw that picture of her kissing the girl and what it said. I went back the next day looking for it, and I couldn't find it. But you know what I did find instead? I found a lot of people posting the picture of her boobs.
Right.
I was so upset. I was like, you know, this is insane. How come I can't find the one picture I'm looking for, but this kind of crap is out there? There are insensitive people. There are asinine, insensitive bullies. But you know what? That's on them. You just have to say, hey, that's on you. You're the bully. You're the idiot. But you can't cure bullying by being a bully, is all I'm saying. And what legislation they're trying to promote is nothing more than a piece of bully paper saying, you know, you will not do this. If you do this, then I'm going to do this. You know, it's like, come on.
Okay.
But
here's part of the problem, though, because, you know, this one girl wore that Romney t-shirt to school, and what did her teacher do to her?
Oh.
Okay. See, we are raising, there's a whole generation of inconsiderate, disrespectful people, mm-hmm. including teachers who were never taught how to interact with people,
mm-hmm. including vice presidents and presidents, too.
Yes. And it's all about learning to respect others. And, yeah, you're always going to have bullies because there are children, you know, some children are in bad situation at home or, you know, who knows why they're bullies. But we had bullies when we were kids, too. But a lot of it comes
yeah.
back down to we've got to get back to our value in this country and teach our children respect.
Yeah.
And how can you do that when you have teachers that don't respect?
Right. And that's exactly it.
And it's a very, very, very slippery slope. And I see good coming up because there's a generation of homeschooled children who are very
yeah.
respectful and very smart and very educated. And so, you know, there is hope. But we've got a long way to go. It's just like I was saying all these tweets, you know, saying they're going to kill Romney. You know,
right.
this is not acceptable social behavior.
Yeah.
And they've never been taught that. See, they've been taught that it's okay to be that way. You know, I can be that
Freedom
way. That's the way we are. Well, but it doesn't matter. You still should have respect in your freedom
right.
of speech.
Right.
You
yes,
know?
That's exactly what you said. Because, you know, we have a freedom of speech, but somehow we've decided that the freedom of speech means we can say whatever we want to whoever we want and get away with it. And it will never come back to hurt us. And someone who has actually a sense of respect inside them would feel guilty if they actually said something mean to someone and they'd even have remorse and say they're sorry. These people have no more remorse anymore either.
You're exactly
you
right.
Know? Because I'll tell you, I will tell you straight out, and this is one of my most shameful moments of my life. One day, I was arguing with my mom, and I said, stop being a bitch. And I felt so bad after I said it. And my mom actually did smack my mouth. And I felt so bad after I said it. I knew to myself I could not take that back. But guess what? I didn't want to kill myself over it.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who, when they feel that remorse for the things they've done and that regret, they and that guilt, they do go out there and do such things. And that's what's got to end, though. People need to realize, even if you make a mistake like that, though, it's not the end of the world.
Right. And it's just so much easier for kids because you have this instant social media where people are taking these pictures. And so, I mean, even in this day and age, you've got to tell your kids, you know, be careful because, you know, this could go all over the Internet. And if it's not something you want all over the Internet, you shouldn't be doing it.
Right.
I mean, you've got to teach them that responsibility that goes along because, you know, I had trouble with kids. You know, some of my kids had troubles. My first husband I'm divorced from, and I had a daughter with problems, and we tried to get her help, and they were telling us they couldn't help her. But, you know, now she's happily married with three kids of her own, and she's doing very well. So, you know, I'm not saying it's all parenting, but bottom line is you've got to have that respect, and you've got to have the parents teaching that respect at home. And like I said, if my kids had acted like Biden did in that debate, they know very well they would be answering to mother, even though they're grown with
exactly.
kids of their
my
own.
Daughter,
yeah.
My
that's just the way it is. Just like I know, you know, I don't want to go embarrass myself in front of my mother, you know, because I would.
But
you know,
we're in the age of letting our children, you know, I just thought back to that stupid Time magazine, you know, image of the woman who had a 4-year-old sucking on her boob.
Yeah.
And we're in the age of where a lot of parents are saying we're going to let our kids raise themselves. And that in and of itself is wrong. Can't sit here, I'm sorry, it's my tit, get it out of your mouth. That's what you say.
It's selfishness in the parent generation because it does take a lot of effort to raise kids if you're watching them and, you know, it's...
It takes a lot of effort to say no to your kids sometimes, but you got to do it.
Yeah. Instead of just yelling at them or just ignoring them, you know, you have to actually get in there and parent.
I'll tell you, my two children right now to this day still say yes, ma'am, when I tell them to do stuff.
My kids, I have a 28-year-old and a 30-year-old. I still give them that evil eye and they know.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all it takes. That's all it takes is a look. You just give them a look and they'll know, oops, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
It is a look.
On something really important, too, with the respect. A person has to have respect for themselves, and the only way they can do that, and that starts at infancy, I think. You know?
It does.
You baby a baby, of course, but, you know, once they start growing up a little bit, you let the baby cry themselves to sleep. Not every time they go, you go pick them up.
Yeah.
You know, and my stepdaughter, she's got, the baby's going to be going on 3 soon.
Well, it's like these people who baby-proof their house. It's like people who baby-proof their house, okay? I'm sorry. There are times like, you know, like those latches on your doors might be needed for your chemicals and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But there are other times, there are things that I think people go overboard on where they, like, take all their knickknacks and put them up high. And you know what? All you have to do is teach your child not to go near it.
Exactly. And
you know, I my famous saying, you can ask my daughter. It's not yours, don't touch.
Yeah.
I heard her. Yep. It's not mine, don't touch.
It's not yours, don't touch. So she knows what is hers, she knows what is not, and she's not supposed to touch anything that's mine, that is especially breakable stuff. And that's something that I've been saying since she was, you know, old enough to crawl.
Yeah, and exactly. And my kids too. You know, and then of course they're gonna try it and you know, give them that evil eye, and they know better. Well, mine do anyway.
Well,
you know, what really sucks with me though. I still have to say the word three. If I start counting, if I say the word three, then they'll start moving.
Yeah, I used to count with my older ones.
you know, because I count down. I don't say you.
You have to make that up.
I still say three, and then they start going upstairs. If I say, okay, bedtime, and they won't move, and then it's like three, and next thing you know, both their butts are hauling up the stairs.
It's so funny how that counting works.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but counting always works.
It works on one.
So,
you know, I'd love to get down to one.
My kids know when I got to three, they were getting their butts whooped. They weren't running no more. There was no hiding at that point.
Yeah. See, I count down. I don't count up. I'd say the count of three starts at three. I'd go three, two. I never, ever got to one. They'd be in action before one.
So there's some tips for any mothers who are listening out there. The counting method does work. It is okay to smack their patties when they're little. Because this was a big thing, Billy, when my 25 and 26-year-old, they would come home from school and tell me I didn't have a right to lay a hand on them. I said, here's the phone. Here's the phone. You go ahead and call those people.
You know,
you'll have fun in those foster homes. But, you know, this is what they were teaching them at school.
But I'll tell you, the cops, they make the determination, because I did call on my mom. I called on my mom when she was beating up my sister one time. My sister and Bobby, the liberal, she was like the family rebel. She liked to disobey every order she was given. You know, my mom would say, okay, you're grounded. She'd sneak out of the house because, like I said, my mom was constantly working. Mm-hmm. So my mom never knew, and I couldn't control my sister. She was the only one I couldn't control. And she'd sneak out of her room, go out the bedroom window and jump onto the bathroom roof and then jump off the house. And next thing you knew, she was gone. She'd be out partying, come home drunk. My mom was beating the hell out of her one day at time with a plunger handle. She literally took you remember those really thick plungers wooden plungers we used to have?
Uh-huh.
Well, she unscrewed the rubber head on it and she took the handle and she was trying to get a good shot at her butt. But my sister, you know, she got one on her hand because she covered it with her hand. And then she was trying to get another one. And I'm like, Mom, you're hurting her. You know, you're really hurting her. And I was scared. I got between them. I was fighting and I called 911. And back then was right when the service started. So, the response was immaculate. They were there within 30 seconds. Not to mention we lived like a block away. But, and when they got to the door, my mom and my sister were still fighting, and the cops, no trouble here, and they left. What the hell, guys, my sister's gonna die if you don't stop this. But, you know, nothing really happened, but I still was scared for my sister's life because of the way my mom looked, too. My mom had that look. She literally, she gave you the look, you were in for it. And I can tell you, too, see, she used to get those regularly. Not that kind of a beating, but she used to get a spanking all the time. But I was more compliant. If my mom said, okay, turn around, bend over, I turned around and bend over. And I can say that happened less times than I can count on one hand in my life. But
right.
My sister, it happened so much at all, you know. It was. But my sister was not the compliant one. My mom had to take her down to get her spanking.
Oh yeah, and you know, I like my oldest son. You know, they would say, you know, sit him in a chair. Well, to make him get in the chair, I had to get the belt because he wouldn't get in the chair. You know,
right?
It's like, oh well, just put him in a chair for a timeout. It's like, of course he was ADHD, but you know, it's like to even get him to get in the chair. But, you know, I'm not advocating for beating children, but I don't think that if you spank them appropriately when you're not angry or,
right.
You know, it doesn't hurt them. Discipline is actually a good thing. And
yeah.
With all this laxness that we've had, we've not had a decrease in the rates of child abuse. It's actually increasing, I think.
Yeah.
And it's because of this.
Because parents are trying. Parents
yeah.
are trying to not, you know, spank their kids, but they end up beating them when they get frustrated with them. My daughter and my son, I can tell you, my son in his lifetime, his 10 years, he's had two spankings. with the hand, and he just one smack right on the butt. And he was told, bend over, you deserve this, this is why. And do you agree? You know, he even had to, he even chose those things. See, what I do is I actually give my children options for a punishment. I say, okay.
I was like Aunt Bobby.
Yes, you are like Aunt Bobby. But anyway.
Oh, boy, Billy.
You're not. She looks like her, though.
Okay, well, let's see. We got somebody calling in at 502. Let me see who we got there real quick.
I think it's Danny.
Hi, who do we have at 502?
Danny Shouse.
Well, hi, Danny. How are you?
All right. How y'all doing tonight?
We're good.
Hello.
What, you got anything to talk about, or the debates, or anything you want to add? We're just kind of straying off topic a little bit.
Well, I think Candy Crowley could have used a whipping.
Oh, my. Yeah.
For
yeah.
interrupting.
That was bad, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, oh.
Hi.
Mitt Romney was getting ready to make the best point of the night when she did that, and I was so angry that she did that because, you know, 70 million people are watching, and the president's going to get called out for his lies, and she does that.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll move on to the next subject. Oh, wait,
yeah.
I don't think he is finished with what he was saying.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. No, and she wouldn't give him follow-up either, like she was supposed to, like was agreed
upon.
That
was the problem with that debate, though, I'll tell you. You know, I was mad at how she would always cut him off. He'd say, wait a minute, I get a chance to speak. No, well, you know, I promise. This was the thing she'd say.
We got to get to these questions. These people want to ask you questions. It's like, really?
The thing she did was, I promise you'll get your chance. He didn't get his chance. You know, that last few minutes that he got to speak, he didn't have a chance to say everything he wanted to say in there.
No.
I mean, give me a break.
And the Democrats today, their word for Mitt Romney is bully. He was a bully. No, he wasn't.
Really?
Romney
was a bully?
Oh,
yeah,
my
God.
That's what the Democrats
Bracket,
say today.
Sit down. He'll have his turn.
Yeah.
So if Romney was a bully, does that mean Obama was a wimp?
No, but I think Obama was more of a bully because he was more of a whiny, immature bully. Though he was the bully's little partner that says, "Candy, make him stop."
I know, right?
Yeah.
And he just transmit calling name. You know, not basically just calling Mitt Romney a liar all night.
Uh-huh.
And then one time, you know, Mitt Romney's like, you know, answer me. How, you know, so what is your, you know, what did you cut these permits by? And he kept trying to go off on this tangent. But what was interesting, I don't know if you guys saw, Luntz had a room full of undecided people. A lot of them had voted for Obama last time. And when he asked them who they were going to vote for this time, only three raised their hand for Obama and the rest raised them for Romney. So I think it may have played well. And with our numbers already going up, like I said, we were up to 51% today in Gallup. I think it's a good thing. But, yeah, it's a little frustrating when you're watching those things and you know everything that's coming out of one man's mouth is a lie and he's calling the other guy a liar when you've got the facts to back it up. It's very, very frustrating. So what was your favorite question of the night, Danny?
Oh, I really didn't have a favorite. I never thought about that.
Yeah. I like the Benghazi one, although we never did get the answer. Because he asked why he didn't shore up security, and we never got that answer. But I did hear, and this guy is supposed to be on Greta tonight, this guy told Fox that Obama came up to him after the debate and said, well, I really, you know, I wanted to contemplate, you know, and I wanted to make sure I got it right. That's why he didn't call it terrorism. So he contradicted himself from the time he was on the debate floor to just after the debate, he went up to this man and told him something totally different.
Oh, does that surprise you?
Well,
No.
I think Obama made two statements. One was blaming the video, and then later in the Rose Garden, he said something about no act of terrorism will soften our resolve.
No acts. And he had been talking about 9/11 because this was obviously 9/12. And it was at the end of his speech. He talked about Libya at the beginning. And this is like a, I think it was an 8-minute speech. But anyway, he talked about Libya at the beginning. And he said, you know, it was reprehensible, this video. And he called them attacks. But he linked them to the video. And then at the end, he started talking about 9/11. And then he said, no acts of terror. But he did not call that specific incident an act of terror. And, you know, Candy Crowley had no business inserting her nose there.
And wasn't that convenient she had the clip?
Oh, isn't it convenient that she had that? Yeah, that transcript. And that she didn't read it. You know, because none of us, all of us here, we all missed that part because we were so frustrated on the front part that he's telling us it's because of video. And we all knew it was a terrorist attack. And for over a week, he sent people out. Even if he did call it an act of terror, why did he send Susan Rice out on Sunday to 5 shows to say it was due to a video and a spontaneous riot or whatever?
Protest.
You know, it's like you can't have it both ways. It can't be both ways. It's one or the other.
The rest of the world that watched the hearings know that they were watching it in real time. So, I mean, they're just freaking liars and they drive me nuts.
I know. How can you watch something in real time and not know what happened? You know, well, we were getting it in real time. This is this lamb who was in charge or something. I don't even know who was in charge because I'm starting to think they're all incompetent. Either they don't talk to each other, which is bad, when you're all in the same administration, or they're all incompetent, or they're all just flat-out liars.
And they
And it's like they're like, well, we were getting it almost in real time. Mm-hmm. Well, if you were getting it in real time, how do you know it wasn't a terrorist attack? And then they lost the ambassador. They lost him. Nobody knew where he was. They went into this room where he supposedly was, but he wasn't there. Just a lot of questions that haven't been answered. And it was funny because they said Obama would do this, and he took responsibility, quote, responsibility in the debate after Hillary took responsibility yesterday, you know, morning. And it's like, well, if you're responsible, then you need to resign because this was the first ambassador killed since 1979. Mm-hmm. And you knew that the security was inadequate. Because you were told, and you refused the request. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. 230 memos.
Yeah. And our people being told not to ask anymore for security because they weren't going to get it. That, to me, is inexcusable. And just, I just can't imagine our government with, you know, doing that. And can you imagine the frustration of these guys on the ground over there, knowing that, like the one guy said, he said it was just a matter of time before this happened.
And then Obama going out there last night and saying he was going to strengthen the military. Hello. And these people believe him?
Oh, they do. It's so funny.
I know.
I mean, it's incomprehensible to me. I got people calling me liars on Facebook.
Me too.
It's like, really, people? This is what he said. This is what he did. You want the pages? I'll give you the pages. I've got facts to back me up, you know. But, of course, they've got the media.
Uh-huh.
Whatever they've got.
Yeah,
I don't
what
know.
Do we know?
I don't know anything. I don't know anything. I'm clueless. Go ahead, Danny.
I was listening to Mark Levin earlier, and a guy called in, and Mark was hitting him with all the facts about the federal lands on the reduced drilling.
Uh-huh.
And the guy says, well, if you include the drilling on private lands, and Mark's like, what does he have to do with drilling on private land? where he has no control.
If he had control, we wouldn't be drilling on private land.
Really?
Because his agenda is to make us dependent on foreign products. His agenda is anti-colonialism. And anti-colonialism means he's not proud to be an American. He thinks America is too stuck on herself and that we're too rich to be brought down to the level of the other countries. That's why he believes the rich have to pay more, because you got to do your fair share and everybody's got to be equal. And no, this is deliberate. This is an Alinsky tactic. You got to make it as bad as you can so people will want you to save them from the badness. Only they've underestimated Americans and our Bibles and our guns, because there's a lot of us still out here. So,
yes, us evil Tea Partiers.
Yeah, the terrorist Tea Partiers and the right wing of the Republican Party who are racists and, you know, us good people that have brains.
We've I don't have a racist bone in my body.
Yeah, like all of us that we're racist because we don't like Obama, even though we supported Herman Cain.
Yeah. But they say, well, he didn't get elected. Well, it wasn't because we weren't supporting him. The Tea Party wanted him in. It was because David Axelrod hired these women to come out and make false accusations, and the NAACP wouldn't back him because he's not black enough. Even though he's got two black parents born in Georgia and was very poor, but, you know, he doesn't fit their narrative. So, therefore, they can't back him because they'll lose their money. I mean, yeah. Yeah, give me a break. I like me some Condoleezza Rice. I love me some Mia Love. I'd have voted for Herman Cain in a second. You know, it has nothing to do with the color of the skin and everything to do with the message and the content of your character, which is actually what that one. Who was that actress? Stacey Dash?
Yeah.
And she's black, and she got all kinds of hate from Twitter when she came out for Romney, and that's what it's about the content of his character, and I thought that was a great line. And I like to see these liberals coming out for Romney, because they're seeing what we have seen for years. They're seeing the actual hate that comes from the left and the liberals if you don't agree with their message.
Yes.
And so I think they can bring it to the attention of the world, because Stacey Dash actually did. She was brought onto TV shows, you know, so it gets more out in the open that this is actually what's going on than if it's just being directed at us, you know, nobody's in the middle of, you know, Indiana or wherever
we're at. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, in a way it's a good thing, but very, very frustrating. But, yeah, I don't know, Barbara, if you were a Herman Cain fan or not, but that's how a lot of us met and got together, was when we were supporting Herman Cain back in September, October, before the Iowa primary. So.
Wow. I wasn't with you guys around then, but, yeah, I was a big Herman Cain supporter myself.
His message. I loved his message and, you know, his worth ethic and just, you know, there was so much to like about him. He wasn't afraid to call the spade a spade, but they had to get rid of him early because he didn't fit their narrative of us being racist, and so he had to go before any votes were cast. Because can you just imagine if in Iowa Herman Cain had won Iowa, what was the Democratic Party going to say? You know, here's this man he's black, he's pure black, and yet the Tea Party elected him. You know.
Yep.
What could they actually say to that? That would take away their whole racist narrative.
They call him an Uncle Tom.
Oh, yeah, I know. They call him Oreo and everything else. And I really like it because he put us onto that sin tactic, you know, switch the subject, ignore the facts, and name call.
I'm calling, yep.
I love it. And I watch for it every time I go on a blog with a liberal because it's so funny. It can make you actually laugh at some of the things they do.
But it does.
Straight away. Because I hate to stoop to their level. I have to admit that once in a while, you get some really, really stupid ones, and you just can't help yourself.
Yeah.
But usually I try to be, you know, at least above the fray, because I think we need to do that to actually keep getting our message across, because if we stoop to their level, then we fit into their narrative of what we are.
Exactly.
And we don't want to listen to that. So, but yeah, sometimes, Danny, it's kind of hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you really wish you could get them within reach.
Yeah. Smack them a couple times, see if them brains jumble up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
In there.
And the thing that I love to do, and that really pisses libs off, is stick with the facts.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they get really mad after a while. I did that on a pro-abortion site of some sort, you know, because I started out just putting out, you know, women, you got a right to sue, you know, you got all this stuff. That's your choice.
Right.
You know, once there's another being involved, there's no choice there. And,
right.
You know, they're arguing away with me. So I just started posting facts, you know, and I went... And then the one lady said, well, those are all conservative sites, you know. So I went to the actual studies that the site cited, because, you know, heaven forbid they go to a conservative site and actually read the study. And then I posted all these studies, and I posted pictures of these babies. Oh, those are photoshopped. You've got to be kidding me. But after I posted all those facts, I didn't get any more comments on my post. It's like, really? Nobody wants to debate me now that I've put all these studies out there that show that abortion actually has psychological effects on the mother, has effects on possibility of having spontaneous abortion.
Yeah.
And there's so many side effects and things that can occur to a woman who's had an abortion that, you know, they've proven. And
that brings me back to a little subject of suicide before. You know what I actually did before? I was doing some research when I got this whole Amanda Todd story, and I was looking up some stuff, and I thought, I want to go back to 2001 and see something. I looked up the suicide rate. The lowest it had been in 30 years, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look up the highest rate, 2009.
Wow.
The highest rate of suicide because, and you know what the number one factor was? Economic troubles.
Uh-huh.
When I saw that, I immediately thought of, okay, lower taxes in 2001, not as many suicides.
Mm-hmm.
Higher taxes 2009, or at least the threat thereof, most suicides.
Well, that was when the whole housing crisis was going on, too.
I don't blame as suicides on bullies at all. Who's the bigger bully? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, when you go out there and threaten to raise people's taxes, you're kind of bullying people. You're saying, oh, well, you know what, these mean, evil oil companies, they have to pay more. You know, the oil companies aren't the ones that are committing suicide, though. It's the people who, you know, need a gallon of gas in their car and can't buy one.
Right.
Okay. Well, guys, I want to thank you all for tuning in. We're going down to our last 90 seconds here. So, Billy, anything quickly you want to say? You got a show coming up when?
On Thursday. It's going to be 8 p.m. Central Time until 10 p.m. Central Time.
Okay.
Obama Nation and me and Rick Bulow, we will probably go a little bit over on the debate. And, of course, we'll be talking Romney and Obama. And anything new that comes up, like, who knows, maybe Hillary Clinton.
Well, there could be something big breaking tomorrow, because they had this bomber in New York today. So who knows what's going to be breaking tomorrow.
Yeah.
Barbara, I want to thank you for stopping in and chatting with us. And Danny, as always, it's good to talk to you. So you guys take care. And the debate's on Monday next week, right?
Yeah.
So,
We'll be
on our show on our regular Tuesday to talk about what happens at the foreign policy debate coming up Monday. So thanks for tuning in, everyone, and have a good night.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.